Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power greater than what you are going through. When you don't know what to do, keep breathing.
That's right, just keep on breathing. From the City of Angels in Los Angeles and the Big Apple in New York City, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver at CaregiverDave.com, along with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, at TheCaregiverSpace.org. And we're coming to you live and on demand 24-7 on 21 global audio and video platforms. Platforms like iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, HealthyLife.net, Vimeo, Stitcher, and so on. Not going to name them all. But we are certainly proud to be voted number one caregiver podcast of the top 50 on Player FM and one of the top six best podcasts by Caring.com, as well as number three podcast out of thousands of caregiver podcasts on Feedspot. And we have an exciting show planned for you today, don't we, Adrian?
Yes.
Yes, because
it's
we...
It's you and me, but it's good.
Me and you. You and me. There was a song about
yeah.
that, I think. Anyway... we're going to talk about our official title, but we never stick with that, do we? If you know a caregiver, and everybody knows a caregiver, everybody knows someone with cancer, everybody knows a caregiver, everybody knows someone with Alzheimer's, everybody knows somebody. And if you want to help your caregiver, you feel helpless, you see them like struggling, you see them, you know, their health declining, you see them just... fading away into oblivion, isolating themselves, and you want to help, but you don't know how to help. We're going to talk about how you can help your caregiver friend stay alive, stay healthy, stay out of the hospital. That's a good topic, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think so. So I was talking to Adrian before the show started about my new book that's still being edited, and it's like, This is a hard birth. You ever have a hard birth?
Editing is the hardest part.
Yeah, but this is extra hard because this is my fourth book. This is the hardest one I've ever done. Maybe it's supposed to be that way. I don't know. But I gave it to my son-in-law, and he's a very good writer. He writes novels and stuff. And he read the first 50 pages, and he says, "Can we meet? We need to get together." And, you know, I didn't like the sound of that, but I said, sure. And we got together, and he just, you know, which is what I wanted. I wanted objective, third eyes. I'm so wrapped up in it because of the Dave's Hammock wisdom and the video. And, you know, he's just saying this isn't translating from video, which I love. It's great. Everybody, you know, they can see you. They can hear your passion. They can hear your sincerity and genuine. They look in your eyes. It all works, but it's just not translating on paper. And and even the title, which the title is Dave's Hammock Wisdom, and, you know, we're questioning everything, even the title, because we're just trying to look at this. And so I've decided that the title...
Maybe Dave's Hammock Wisdom is the subtitle.
Maybe. Subtitle was...
Translated from...
Yeah, 99 Lessons Learned Living Life, which was great. You got four L's. I mean, you know, it works with the formula, whatever the formula is, of a great subtitle. But I decided, he told me that I needed a new title. So I worked on it, and it's not easy coming up with a title. You know, the best way to do it is to get a bunch of people in a room and just brainstorm, and there's no stupid idea. And then, you know, eventually you'll come up with it. Well, I didn't do that. I was just praying, God, I need a title. Give me a title, subtitle, whatever. And so I did come up with a title. It's Dave's Hammock Wisdom, which I'm happy about that because I've got the cover. It's me on the hammock in Hawaii. I mean, even though I'm emotionally wrapped up in that, that's a great title. It's a great picture on the cover. But the subtitle needed work. So let me see if I can remember what it is now. Because especially it's hard remembering titles and subtitles because, you know, your brain is still like brainstorming dozens and dozens of them, and it says, oh, which one did we decide on? Okay, so here it is. Dave's Hammock Wisdom, Success Using Uncommon Sense. And I think if I saw that title, first of all, the Dave's Hammock Wisdom, that's kind of strange. And I say, what do you mean Dave's Hammock Wisdom? And then, so you want to read more, Success Using Uncommon Sense. And then they see this guy in the background in a beautiful Hawaii setting, like relaxing on the hammock. I would pick it up, but maybe that's just me. But I think it's a better title than 99 Lessons Learned Living Life.
Yes.
Because
success grabs.
Yeah, success
people.
Is a great word, because who doesn't want to be success? And I almost look like some successful guy just laying on a hammock, you know, who doesn't have to work. I mean, that's not the case, but that's what it kind of looks like. So
yeah.
You're going to appeal to the entrepreneurs, I think, because what we preach to caregivers is what entrepreneurs need to learn, right? You can't be a successful entrepreneur unless you are in control. You're taking care of yourself. You're sleeping right. You're eating right. You're putting your needs first, and so on. I mean, I like to say that caregivers have the problems they have today, the same problems they had before they became a caregiver. You know, it just magnifies your problems. So that's why, gosh, if we can get these people before they even become caregivers, Adrian, wouldn't that be great? If we can get them putting their needs first and eating right and sleeping right and putting their oxygen masks on before they even become a caregiver, because I always like to say, if you're not a caregiver, don't tune us out. Just wait. You're either going to become one or you're going to need one. And it's as simple as that. And I tried so hard to get Rosalind Carter, the first lady, to do a testimonial because, you know, I was there and I took a picture with her and gosh, she's so old. She's like 90, 92 or 94. I can't remember. But, you know, she was like dozing off during the church service that we were there. And I don't blame her. I would probably be dozing off if I was that age. But so I spoke to her. Her assistant, and she says, you know, she's 94, whatever it is, and she's earned the right to just take it easy because she's done so much for so long, and she just can't do that anymore. She can't read books, and she, you know, because she reads them very thoroughly before she puts her name on anything, and you know, they're just relaxing, they're enjoying life, they go over to and have dinner at friends' houses, you know, they'll travel a little locally. But, you know, they want to stay healthy and they want to stay active. And you know, the president is finally feeling good. And he showed up at his church the following week that I was there because I missed him. So instead, I remembered that I had a testimonial from Superman, Dean Cain. And so I put that one on the book, the full one on the back cover and the just a blurb on the bottom. So what can we do, Adrian, to help caregivers? Because I remember when I was not a caregiver, I knew some people, a friend of mine, and he was older. He was the vice president of Carnation Company. He was a very successful guy, very brilliant man. And he took time out of his busy schedule, and I was just in my early 20s, just freshly married, and started a new business, and he took his time to just kind of pour into me. And the guy had a stroke like a couple of years later, and he couldn't talk, exactly like my wife's stroke, couldn't talk but could understand. And his poor wife, you know, she was struggling because he was very strong-willed, you know, vice president
right.
of formation.
Successful.
You can imagine. Just because you can't talk doesn't
that.
Mean your personality changes. He's still wanted to be in control, just like my wife is a very strong-willed woman. You know, I am woman, hear me. And so she still wants to be that number one strong-willed woman. And even though she can't talk, boy, she's still kind of in control. You know, she can communicate through Pictionary, charades, two games I hate. But I'm still learning to love. And so I didn't quite know how to minister to her. I could barely minister to him because you can only And I'm starting to understand why all of Charlene's friends have just dwindled away over the years, you know, because she had more friends than I did. But it's hard trying to communicate with someone. You can only say so many things. You can only pretend things are normal for so long, and then it kind of gets awkward, and I experienced that. So what can we do, because everybody knows one, to help out a caregiver? You know, you've run out of things to say, so if you see him walking on the other side of the street, you know, you might want to, some people will avoid them, or if they see him in the supermarket, they'll go down a different aisle because they just don't want to start a conversation because it's awkward. So you got any ideas? I do. We'll share them.
You start.
Okay, it's always me who has to start.
No, it's not always you.
Well, I think that a lot of things, caregivers, let's remember, they hate to ask for help, you know, and we know they eat, so I think if you go to the supermarket, you should just naturally assume that you should call your caregiver friend and say, hey, I'm going to the market today. Is there anything I can pick up for you? That would be very easy, right? And there's no awkward conversations. They would say, oh my gosh, thank you for calling. I've been trying to get out to the market and, you know, the milk is sour if you can pick some up, and the cheese is moldy if you can pick up some Swiss cheese or whatever it is, you know. And there, maybe 2, 3, 4 items, and you feel good, you're helping them out, and you go and you just drop it off. And if you don't want to stay, you say, you know, I got to go. I got, you know, I got to pick up my daughter or something, but here, let me pay you. No, you don't have to pay me. Or if you do want her to pay you, yeah, let him, you know, whatever. But that's one simple thing that you can do. Can you think of one?
Oh, of the simple things.
Yeah, we'll start simple, then we'll get complicated.
Yeah, if you're the caregiver, you should have the list of things that, you know, people always say, if you need anything, just call. And the caregiver is, you know,
just have that list or a whiteboard.
Not really in the position all the time to just pick up the phone and call. So yeah, have the list ready so that when, or at least really know what you need.
Yeah, because people are always saying, hey, you need anything I can do?
Anything I can do.
I can't think of it. I'll let you know. And then you never do. But if you got that list ready.
The problem of having someone who only wants you to take care of them is a real problem. I mean, Steve only wanted me. He wouldn't consider having an aide take care of him. He was lucky that I was able to do it. I was also able to do it for his mother, the two of them, for a while. But finally, I had to get a companion for his mother so I could continue to do what I was doing for Steve. But it's a difficult situation, and I'm not, he would let me leave the house when I would ask. So I guess what it amounts to there is that the caregiver needs to set some ground rules.
Yeah, or boundaries. Yeah.
Like I need 2 hours a week, or I need to see my friends for brunch on Saturday or Sunday, or I need to meet somebody, you know, once or twice a week for lunch. And if it means that it's just for those few hours, somebody else is going to come in. Usually people don't come in for less than 4 hours, and it's not cheap. But if you've got friends that can come in.
Yeah, or you can barter.
Or barter.
Now, what do you do if they give you a hard time? They say, no, you can't do that. How do you push back? Some caregivers
say,
won't.
I
They'll just
take,
say, oh, well.
I have to take care of myself, or I won't be able to be here for you.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you say that often enough, they'll hear it.
Yeah, it's like decide what mountain you want to die on, because there has to be a mountain that you are willing
Yep.
to die on, you know.
Pick your
Maybe not
battles.
all of them. Pick your battles, and because I know you and I have both heard so many caregivers, oh, I can't get this done, and no, you know, I can't get any sleep. He's up every hour, and this and that. And I'll ask him, well, have you tried this? Have you tried that? No, that won't work. You know, I mean,
That won't
they're
work. That
so
won't, yeah.
negative, you know.
They dismiss all suggestions.
They
They should
remind me.
listen. Now that's a good thing. You should tell a caregiver to listen because you never know when
Yeah.
somebody's going to actually have a good idea.
It reminds me of, you know, the little baby elephants in the circus. They will tie their foot down to a little stake with almost, you know, string.
With a
And
rope, yeah.
yeah, and it's a thin rope. I hear my phone ringing
Yeah.
somewhere. That's where my phone is. And so I you know, the elephant might not be strong enough to break that rope, you know. But now, you know, several years later, the elephant is huge, and they keep using that skinny little rope to tie down that elephant with,
They've learned.
and they won't try to break the rope because they tried it and it didn't work. And it's like they say, an elephant never forgets. Sometimes caregivers never forget. You know, it's like you got to, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And if you still don't succeed, try again and try again and try again. And you know, don't give up your zest for life. Don't give up your zeal for wanting to just be happy and have fun. And, you know, when's the last time a caregiver had fun? That's a great question to ask caregivers, because
Well,
you'll get terrible answers.
see if you can find anything you can do together, even if it's just watching a movie on television.
You're talking about the care receiver and the caregiver, the
Yes,
loved
so
one?
that the two of you can enjoy something together,
Yeah, and maybe
and you
that will
can even let
satisfy
the
the need.
and you can even let the person who's being cared for pick the movie to give them a feeling of power,
Yeah.
of they still matter.
So when Steve would insist that you were the one, the only one, is it because you didn't do things like that with him? I mean, did he have an insatiable appetite for you? Or I'm thinking that if you don't do things like that, like watch a movie together where you're together and have holding hands for 2 hours or something, that might fulfill some of that neediness, and they may let you go to the market, as opposed to like, God, we don't do anything together, you know. You come and you go, and I feel like I don't even know you anymore, and that could cause neediness to where, no, I don't want you to go, stay here or whatever.
Steve was needy when he was well. I mean, he was a hypochondriac, so I was used to caregiving before I had to caregive. 'Cause believe me, taking care of a hypochondriac is not an easy thing to do.
You know what a hypochondriac will put on his tombstone?
I told you so.
See, I told
That's
you
what
I
I would
was sick.
say. You know what I put on Steve's tombstone?
Can't
Gone
imagine.
fishing.
That
And
is funny.
all of the other tombstones in the area are so serious,
Really?
but
Gone
gone
fishing.
fishing. That's who he was. So I was very lucky. I mean, Steve had periods where he was totally incapable of doing anything, but for the most
Really?
part, Steve was able to go to work, and he might come home tired, but he was able to live his life, except for the days where he had to go for radiation or chemo or whatever. No one, and he wouldn't let anyone know he was sick because he didn't look sick. It was amazing.
Wow.
So that was good for him. But that doesn't happen, you know, and it was also good for me because we could still go out and do things and people mm-hmm. wouldn't come up to us and say, oh, what's wrong, you know, you don't look like yourself. You know, there was none of that. And if he lost yeah. any weight, it was like he was always trying to lose weight. So
yeah.
that was there. But there were always other issues. There were control issues and I find that in caregiving, that's a big issue. That
how old were you two when you married? How old were you two when you married?
When we married? We were together for 26 years before we married.
How old were you when you met?
I was 32.
Oh, and he was?
He was 39.
Okay, so he was controlling right from the beginning.
That was his first Jack Benny birthday party.
So he was controlling from the very beginning, huh?
Very beginning. He was not trusting. And I think that that's a big thing with people who only want to have their spouse or partner or whatever, or parent, be the one that takes care of them because they're not comfortable or secure with somebody else. They've learned to trust you, but not necessarily somebody, a total stranger that you're going to leave them with. Sometimes even a friend they're afraid isn't going to be able to do what you can do for them.
Wow. That's a similar story to what's the name of the Kiss guy? Simmons.
Gene Simmons.
They were together for like 25 years, and he just didn't want to get married. And they even had like two kids. And finally, he says, "Okay, let's get married."
And well, Steve asked me to marry him when he came out of his induced coma after he had the peritonitis that took him to the hospital.
Oh,
that
wow.
and when he came out of the coma and asked me to marry him, I said, "You better ask me in 3 days because wait till the drugs wear off. I'm not going to say yes and then be disappointed." You know, but
wow.
it took that long for him to trust me unconditionally.
Wow.
Yeah, trust is a big issue with not just in relationships, but when you get into a caregiving situation, you have to trust the person that you're with to be able to take good care of you.
So were you okay?
Their life is in your hands.
Were you okay being with a controller? I mean,
it took time. I had to learn to let a lot of stuff roll off my back and just listen to him and go, "Oh, here he goes again." But
so you loved him more than you hated being
yes.
controlled.
Yes. I mean, there was no contest. He was quite a guy.
What was his most outstanding quality as a person that you loved about him?
His humor.
Funny guy.
Oh, he was brilliant.
Made you laugh.
Well, not just made me laugh. The thing is, after 32 years together, because we were married for 6 years after he came out of that coma, 5.5 years. But you hear the same jokes over and over after a while. There is some there's a lot of humor in just day to day, you know, conversation. But if he told me a joke, it's like, how many times am I going to hear that joke? And you expect me to laugh every time I hear it.
You told him that?
You know.
And how would he respond to that when you told him?
Yeah, he would accept it. He would accept it. That when I finished sentences for him or gave, you know, finished the punchline, he got the point. But to have given me advice, I'm trying to think of what advice I should have listened to. I'm I'm not being arrogant when I say I don't know how I did it, but I really feel like did with him and all of his convoluted issues, I think I did everything right. I don't know what I could have done any better down to the minute that he died, the second that he died. So
now you're a good wife, you're a faithful wife, you're happy now, you're adjusted, you're living a great life. I don't think you have any regrets.
I don't have, that's the beauty of being a caregiver, a real loving caregiver, is knowing that it is coming out of it and knowing you have no regrets. It's easier to move on once you know I've done all I could. I did a good job. I really did a good job. And other people might not think so, but I know what I did.
Doesn't matter what other people think.
And I didn't care what they weren't there to help.
That's for sure.
I mean, he had friends who he'd get together with because he was able to leave the house. So he would get together with his friends, and those were the few people who did know that something was wrong.
Hmm.
But most people did not know. He didn't want them to.
Yeah.
He wanted to be considered just a normal, healthy, you know, funny guy. Right?
And he left you in good shape.
He was
a good provider for you, and he left you in very good shape. What a blessing.
He did. He did. I take credit for some of that, but I put him on the right track.
Behind every great man is a greater woman.
Not greater, but I was a good partner.
Let's take a break, and we'll talk more about this when we get back. So don't go away.
Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first, before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. Will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver. On sale everywhere. And at caregiverscaregiver.com.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Dave Nassani on the Caregiver Dave Show. And we're talking about what we can do to the caregivers that we know to make their lives a little better, to help them to be healthy, to stay alive. I know you get tired of hearing the statistic, 30% of them die before their loved ones do. Many more become sicker than the ones they care for, eventually needing a caregiver of their own. And so, you know, I'm in the midst of writing a book about wisdom, Dave's Hammock Wisdom, and have a new subtitle, like I said. What is it again? Success Using Uncommon Sense, which I like that. The more I read it over and over again. You like it, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, good. We're on the right track. It's easier to write when you know what you're trying to say through a title and you know who your target audience is, because I don't want my audience to just be caregivers, but future caregivers. There's a good way of saying it, because everyone's going to become a caregiver.
Yeah, so, but you're saying that entrepreneurs need to learn these lessons too. So it's really targeted at anybody who wants this kind of, it's simple, common sense kind of wisdom.
which isn't common from experience. Which isn't common anymore.
No.
One of the things my son-in-law was saying is that, you know, you use a lot of cliches and a lot of old sayings that are just not relevant anymore because, you know, your granddaughter doesn't know who this person was on television that everybody used to say. Before Lost in Space came out again recently, one of my favorite sayings was, "Danger, Will Robinson," you know. And
oh, yeah, who's Will Robinson?
Yeah. For a long time, nobody knew who Will Robinson was or what he meant or where he came from. And maybe you still don't know, right?
Well, it wasn't one of my favorite shows, but yeah, I knew who Will Robinson was.
But a whole new generation now knows who Will Robinson is because they made a series out of it. Again, it came back. He got rebirth. And
let me ask you if you were given any advice that you would pass on when you were caregiving at the beginning and having a lot of trouble.
Well, the only advice I got was, I got to go way back now. So I'm in the hospital. Charlene had her stroke. And we have no idea that this is going to be a life-changing event. Seems like all the doctors were acting very solemn and sad and whispering like they knew that we were, you know, a couple of poor people who are embarking on this journey that we had no idea. But, you know, we were pretty positive, and I was very optimistic, as I always am, and I thought this is just going to be a little speed bump. She'll get over this and we'll be fine. We'll be back on track. And, you know, the days turned into weeks. The weeks turned into months. The months turned into years. The years turned into decades. And I had no idea that 23 years later I would still be dealing with this. And I don't know when it happened, but thank God that something happened where we, even though we believed for the best, we expected the best, you know, we also were pragmatic and knew, well, if this could be it, you know, this could be the rest of our lives. And, you know, like my feet hurt because of arthritis, and sometimes they hurt so much I got to use my wife's wheelchair. And so I'll say, well, this is it. You know, if I may have to spend the rest of my life in a wheelchair, that's okay. There's no better time in history to be disabled than it is today, because, you know, they've got all these gadgets and they got the sidewalks with slopes and stuff. Now, I'm not wishing that on myself, obviously, but you know, you always try to say, okay, well, what's the worst case scenario? What's the worst thing that can happen? Otherwise, you know, you walk around depressed and sad. And if the worst thing is that I'm in a wheelchair the rest of my life, well, hey, my wife's in a chair. She seems to be doing okay. And there's a ton of people in chairs. They seem to be doing okay. I don't wish this on me, and I'll do everything in my power to make sure it never happens, you know, by exercising. I say use it or lose it. So I walk, even though it's painful to walk. I'm going to keep walking until I can't.
What made you finally go to a support group?
Well, this woman came to our hospital room, and she was a little scary looking. She was attractive. Let me clarify.
Nurse Babbitt. Yeah.
She was just a volunteer. We were at St. Joseph in Burbank, and she was visiting each of the patients in the stroke ward. And we were next, and I was watching her, and she walked a little funny, and she talked a little funny, but she had a cute little blonde bob, you know, and she was cute looking, but she was scary looking at the same time because of the way she walked and talked. I didn't quite know what to make of her. And then finally she came over to us, and she says, "Hi, my name is Sybil," or whatever her name was. It was very hard to understand her. She goes, "I want you to know that we have a support group for stroke survivors and their caregivers." I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, because she says she had a stroke. I got very scared because I says, is this what we have to look forward to? Is this what my wife is going to sound like? I said, oh my God, I remember not being okay with that and being a little scared and not wanting to talk to her anymore. Just go away, you know. But I obviously didn't say that. Now, looking back in retrospect, I would give anything to have my wife talk like that because she can't talk at all. You know, so be careful what you wish for. So I don't know how many times we were living at the hospital for 6 weeks. I mean, we were there a long time. And I was sleeping there many nights. They allowed me to, breaking the rules.
Me too.
And so she would come by again and again and again. And finally, you know, after kind of reality set in, and maybe it was the third or the fourth week, and she still can't talk, and I'm starting to think, And I started having symptoms of burnout because, you know, I wasn't taking care of myself. I wasn't eating right. I wasn't sleeping right. I wasn't showering. I mean, I was just, I was neglecting my business. And I says, you know, maybe I need to go to a support group to see what it's all about, see what she's talking about. So I went, and it was great. I met people there just like me, burned out caregivers. And they all started telling their horror stories about how their loved one treats them.
Right.
And it was funny because I could relate. And we was, oh, yeah, my wife does that too. You know, it was like a burden being lifted off my shoulders because for the first time, I didn't feel like I was the only one this was happening to because you feel like you're all alone. And the whole world is going around doing their stuff, living their normal lives, and I'm stuck in this hospital room with my disabled wife, and I don't know if she's ever going to get better. Because, you know, you're not in a room with other stroke victims. You might be in a room
right.
with someone who had a heart attack, and another might be in a room with somebody who's just, you know, broke their arm or something. So it's like you feel like you're the only one in the world who's ever had a stroke. I certainly never knew what a stroke was before. Didn't know what the symptoms were or what the prognosis of someone who had one was. And we had friends, lots of friends coming, lots of visitors. I mean, tons of visitors. The whole wall was full of cards from top to bottom, left to right. And you could just see the doctors and the nurses. That made them even sadder to say, oh my gosh, you know, this woman, you know, had a life and she had friends and they're just shaking their heads, and they're always whispering, you know. And it just, it felt good to go to the caregiver support group because I could be normal, even though I wasn't normal. I was around other people who could relate to me, and I could feel like I was normal. There's something good about feeling
honest.
Normal.
You could be honest.
You don't have to hide anything. And it was very refreshing. It was very liberating. And so I went back, and I went back. And then when she got out of the hospital, one room they had a stroke support group, and the other room they had the caregiver. And so they would be together, and then they would separate, and then the stroke people would talk about how rotten the caregivers are treating them. And the caregivers would talk about how rotten the stroke survivors were treating them. So it was very comical. But, you know, I guess that's what we had to do to survive, to get through another day. And so hopefully I answered your question.
Yeah, I mean, I know I was going to say that one of the things that I would tell a caregiver to make their life easier would be to find... if not a disease-specific support group, just support Age. Groups online that have other people who share. Because really, over many diseases, yes, of course, every disease or every illness has its own special areas of interest, but. Caregivers have so many things in common, and the internet's made it possible for all of these people to communicate. Now, Steve was diagnosed in 2005, and Facebook, I don't even think there was Facebook. Facebook probably came around a couple of years later.
MySpace, which I wasn't on.
MySpace I was not on. But I remember being up late one night after I'd finally put him to bed and going online to the American Cancer Society and writing letters to a few different caregiver agencies that I could find online. And it was not easy, in, you know, way back when. And once the American Cancer Society was able to put me in touch with the right people, you know, one group led to that I couldn't go to that was a face-to-face group because I couldn't get out of the house, led to another group, led to another group. And finally, I found the right group, and the support was invaluable. I really don't think that I could give a caregiver any better advice than to find other caregivers to talk to.
Yeah.
To find out what they did in like in similar situations, even though they may differ. They're, you know, if it's loneliness, if it's isolation, hey, you know.
Yeah. And age groups are very important because we were fortunate because this woman was relatively young. She was, you know, 50, 55.
Yeah.
And Charlene was 52 at the time. I was only 42. So, you know, to me, everybody was older. But she was saying that it was a special stroke support group for younger stroke survivors. Younger in quotes because... we tried a couple of other support groups that were right there at the hospital. And, I mean, these guys are in their 90s and
exactly.
85, and Charlene is like 52. And it was like being surrounded by your grandparents or your great-grandparents, and a lot of them didn't look very well. They looked like, you know, they were getting ready to croak. And that's depressing, and that's why she didn't want to go to a support group, because everyone in there was older than her. And it was just depressing. It's like, oh my gosh, is this where I am? You're going to leave me with all these old people? And so the one good thing about Candace, I think her name was, and the younger support group was that Charlene was not the youngest person in there. She was many times right in the middle. There were some older, but I remember there was a 23-year-old young mother who had a brainstem stroke and young children at home and a husband. And then there were other people in their 30s. And believe it or not, young people get strokes about 15 to 20% of the time. And they don't know why. But, you know, it doesn't just happen to old people.
It was like early onset Alzheimer's. You better find a group of people that have, you know, that are your age, or you're not going to get any advice that's pertinent.
Yeah, because it, you know, and you do really connect with, if you're young, you can connect with a young person or someone your age, because it's like, this shouldn't be happening to me in my 40s, you know, I shouldn't, at 42,
right.
I was a caregiver, and I didn't think this should be happening to me. You know, I was still young. Nothing hurt in my body. I was active. And, you know, that's why I kept telling myself, this is just a speed bump. We're going to get over this. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm 52 now. I'm the age that she was that, you know, at the time that she had the stroke, and she's 62 and we're still dealing with it. And I remember having a 10-year anniversary. I went to a party because I was still believing one day. Because she met a guy who was had a stroke 10 years ago, lost his speech, and all of a sudden, one day he started talking again. So we always had hope that one day something was going to just snap in her brain and she was going to get it and she was just going to start talking like this guy did. And
was
that
Charlene
was
in any kind of therapy at that point?
Yeah, they gave her 6 weeks of speech therapy in the hospital. They gave her 6 weeks of speech therapy at Northridge after the hospital, and they gave her 6 weeks of speech therapy at home in home care. And, you know, she progressed, but it's hard work. And a lot of times she just wasn't willing to do the work. It's I compare it to going to the crap table in Las Vegas. You put down a $100 bill on the table on a number, and if you win, you get a penny back. And those were the odds with Charlene, because she was working hard. She was working hard with speech. She was working hard trying to walk with orthotic devices and this and that. And she was working hard, and the progress she saw was in pennies, you know. And finally she just said, screw it. I'm going to stay in this chair. I don't want that orthotic advice. I can't device anymore because I can't wear my pretty shoes. I have to wear this ugly tennis shoe. And so she just made up her mind one day that she doesn't want therapy anymore. And we even tried all of the weird stuff that's not covered by insurance, you know, the hyperbaric oxygen, the electronic biofeedback, the herbs and the pills from China.
Right.
Each time, you know, we'd shelled out $10,000 from our pockets and wasn't any better off. And finally, she just didn't want to try anything anymore. Anyone who says, oh, there's this new thing. No. I guess people with cancer are the same way. They're bombarded with all sorts of new cancer developments and this and that, you know.
Lots of people with cancer will keep trying anything.
I guess because they're dying, perhaps, versus just being disabled.
Versus just living a new way.
Yeah.
So in a new reality, right.
Well, let's take another break, and we will be right back, so don't go away.
Our featured speaker is a best-selling author who has written numerous books and articles. He's a speaker, life coach, and host of Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program. He frequently appears on television and radio shows all across the country and has even shared the stage with Suzanne Somers at Harvard. But his most important role is caregiver to his beautiful wife, Charlene, for over 22 years. Please welcome Mr. Dave Nassani!
I want to share with you a love story. In a couple of weeks, my wife and I will be celebrating 44 years of being together. My wife, Charlene, and I had a fairy tale storybook romance, courtship, and marriage for the first 21 years of our lives together. One day out of nowhere, my wife has a headache, the headache of her life. She suffered a massive stroke and it left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. And in that moment, our world turned upside down. I gotta tell you, the next 2 years was like a living hell.
I just didn't know what to do. I felt guilty most of the time. I became a caregiver. I didn't even know what a caregiver was.
I was experiencing the same problems that other caregivers experience.
If you don't take care of you, I can't take care of her.
Well, that's why I wrote the book.
Now I can teach other caregivers. I'm living proof that you can thrive as a caregiver. My wife and I travel now all over the world sharing our story. One day life is going to call upon you to be the captain of your boat. Heck, you might be saving your own life. Thank you.
Yeah. And we're back on
Why
the Caregiver Day
Show.
I just get a kick out of that sizzle reel.
You crack yourself up.
I do. I just can't believe I did all that stuff. I can't believe it. Because, you know, in the back of our mind, I'm just Mobile Dave, own a gas station, you know. And so, you know, a lot of good has come out of a lot of tragedy. And isn't life like that, you know? I mean, look at you
yes.
with the caregiver space. You're a celebrity in the caregiver circles. And you're leaving a legacy to caregivers and your legacy to whatever relatives you have. I know you didn't have any children, which is a shame.
No children.
It's a shame. But you know what? Children just break your hearts when they get older. So you've saved yourself
a
lot
of pain. I don't know if it's a shame. I know that last night I was feeling very sorry for myself. And,
really?
Well, I felt, you know, like, what do I have to live for? I'm killing myself looking for a new apartment. I'm
but you're
selling
having fun.
This. You're
having fun living life, aren't you? It's fun to live in Manhattan.
I will have fun when I'm settled in a new place.
Well, I meant, you know, you're not having fun through the moving process, but yes.
No, but yes.
When you get there,
course.
You're going to have a good time. You're going to be
on
Easy Street, as they say.
Once I get there, but I'm still going to be, you know, with the caregiver space, and that'll be coming out of my pocket, and that's part of why I'm selling this place. It's either this place or the caregiver space.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, there's no contest, really. I think the caregiver space is more important. I don't need as much space as I have now. You've seen it.
True philanthropist in the true sense of the word. You don't need all that room, Adrian. It's just
But I mean, if somebody asks me what my occupation is, I have a hard time saying philanthropist. I really do.
Well, let's see if we can come up with a name for you. What is Adrian's occupation?
Corey considers himself the director of the caregiver space. I'm president of the caregiver space.
Founder and president.
Founder and president. That's the way.
That sounds good to me.
And what do you do? I look for apartments. It's not a job description right now that I could really
describe.
Here's
what you say when they say, well, what do you do? Well, like Rosalind Carter, I've decided to take it easy because I've worked so hard all of my life, and I still like going for coffee on Fifth Avenue and meeting with my friends, and I will always share the passion of the caregiver space and watching it grow as a child grows into adolescence and then adulthood.
Well, I'll be speaking, and I'll be doing all those things too.
So I'm a speaker.
I have what to say. And
Rosalind spoke till she was very late in life, well into her 90s.
Yeah. So I mean, no, they're an amazing couple. When I was faced with the honor of going down to be one of the 90 caregiving experts in the country to go down to the Carter Center to be part of it wasn't even a round table. They were really looking for ideas.
And what did they do with the ideas after they got them?
We'll find out. They're still working on them. I mean, that wasn't that long ago. So it was just the beginning
September,
of November.
Yeah.
So November. Hmm. So it was amazing. You know, she attended the bigger meetings. She didn't go to the breakout sessions, but she did attend the bigger meetings, and she attended lunch and met people, and she was delightful. And she had finally gotten a new person to direct the foundation, who was going to take it in a direction where they would make more of a difference. Because here you have a first lady who's been working on this since 1985.
Mm.
And the word caregiver wasn't even used at that point. I mean, the word caregiver
wasn't in the name or anything,
There were no, it's nothing. So despite her power and knowing that she had all of these connections, it was very difficult to get anyone in Washington to listen to her.
Hmm.
And now people are starting to listen. So that's good. I mean, the one thing that I did find out and that was very interesting was that Walmart now has a caregiver program.
Oh, cool.
Walmart employs more people than any other single employer in the United States, including Amazon.
Wow.
And they're helping their employees who are caregivers. And I think that the fact that a company that's that big has seen the need to do something is the beginning of a good thing, you know.
Sure.
And some of the people that were there were the people that initiated it and had what to say about how to take this to other organizations and sell them on the idea. Because God knows caregivers need the help.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, you know, just having your friends and your immediate network and your family behind you, if you're not getting help from the government or foundations that you might be able to apply to for money, it's difficult.
Yeah.
You know? So,
like I've said before, Hawaii already has a $1,500 respite program. And I actually ran into a cab driver when I was there, an Uber driver, and he says, yeah, I get about $1,500 from the government, and I work about 30 hours at my job, and I'm able to use that money to, you know, get people to watch my wife and this and that. So I met a real live recipient of the Kapuna respite bill, which I think should be a model for the rest of the country. And I'm still believing and dreaming that you and I will be invited to Washington at the White House and the Congress and the Senate.
You think so? Oh, I hope so.
I know so, yes.
God, so I think it's about time.
That. Yeah, why not? So with your connections and my connections, one of us will do something, you know.
Yeah. Or Lisa Hirsch.
Does she have connections?
No, she's just got the willpower.
Yeah, she's a fireball.
Yeah.
And she's so young and has so much energy that I wish I had. How old is she? We shouldn't talk about her age over the air.
I won't say.
She's younger than us, right?
Than you? So.
Than me?
No.
Really? Well, she looks pretty good for her age. Of course, you look pretty good for your age. I look pretty good for my age. We all look good.
Yeah.
All right. Last thoughts.
We were very smart caregivers and took care of ourselves.
Very smart caregivers. I joke around and say, gee, if I knew I was going to live this long, I'd have to take better care of myself.
Keith Richards stopped smoking.
Keith Richards?
Yes, from the Rolling Stones. Do you know what Keith Richards looks like?
I know the Rolling Stones.
Keith Richards is the one that's all knackered and really looks terrible. And Stephen Colbert said, well, I'm glad he finally started to take care of himself before it was too late.
So Mick Jagger's in better shape than he is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Much better shape.
Yeah, who's in bad shape just by looking at them? Dog the Bounty Hunter in Hawaii. You know who he is?
Mm-hmm.
And his wife recently died, and it was so sad because she was his sweetheart. And so now, while we were over there, his daughter was arrested, and the reason why was, you know, just family drama that dog's wife's best friend has become friends, more intimate friends, and so they've been like dating. And I know a fireman. Remember, I told you about this fireman whose wife committed suicide. No one saw it coming. She was young, and all of a sudden, after about a year, he's dating her best friend. And, I mean, there's nothing sinister about it. They just started out by comforting each other, and she loves his wife.
They were close.
So much. They were very close. And all of a sudden, you know, something's developing out of that. So it seems to be a very
common thing. Anything wrong with that.
Yeah. The kids have a problem with it. And so apparently his daughter had a problem, and an argument ensued, and she's very strong-willed, and she was reported to push an officer once and push another officer twice, and it got her arrested, you know.
Well, there are times
and she was drunk.
The children think that this has been going on for a while.
Oh.
That, yeah. You know, when their mother was sick, that he wasn't being a good boy.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's a
yeah.
common misconception, or not.
Yeah.
But
so last word, I'll give you the last word, advice to
last
a caregiver.
Last word? Well, my name is Adrienne Gruberg.
And I'm an alcoholic.
I'm the president and founder of the, well, you don't give your last name at an AA meeting.
That's true.
Adrienne G.
Yes.
President
and founder of the Caregiver
Space. President and founder of the caregiverspace.org, which is where you can reach me at adrienne@thecaregiver.org, caregiverspace.org. And the site's thecaregiverspace.org, and all of the social media links are there. We've got a great Facebook community with a lot of different breakout sessions.
Yes, and I'm Dave Nassani, president and founder of caregiverdave.com.
See?
And author of 4 books. It's My Life 2, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Getting Hosed, and Dave's Hammock Wisdom, Success Using Uncommon Sense.
It says 6 books on the commercial, dear.
Those are counting the books that I co-authored with, which I don't like to count because, you know, I only have
but
a chapter.
But you did on the commercial.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know what the
I had 3 books that I wrote, and I had 3 books that I co-authored.
Okay, so but, this is...
So I kept saying, well, should I mention, you know, that I'm 6, of course it'd be 7 now, or do I just, I decided, you know, that there are so many co-authored books out there, and there's so many, I forget the word they use it when they, when there's like 50 or 60 authors, and each one has a chapter.
Yeah.
I don't think those count.
Compilations, compilations,
yes. It's too easy to do that, so I'm not counting those. So I'm down to 4 now. I went from 6 to 4.
I think that's just fine.
Yes, and soon to be number 5. I'm going to be writing my 5th book. I've got it all planned already, and I'm not even done with the 4th one. And the 5th one is about my radio show of celebrity caregivers. And I get about 5 minutes to, you know, we have a full interview with the celebrity. And then we ask a caregiver question at the very end. And many of them, about 95% of them, have a caregiver story that just makes them teary-eyed, you know, as they shift gears. And they're not talking about themselves and their career and their latest movie and this and that. But now they're talking about their mother and or their brother with multiple sclerosis or whatever, or their father who has Alzheimer's. So I'm going to do a compilation book, not a compilation book, a transcription, transcribing the interviews that I've done. I think I've got almost 100 of them now. And I'm going to make a book called Celebrity Caregivers or something like that.
But you have to get releases.
No, because they're all public. They're all publicly done on public interviews. And I was the interviewer, so I don't need a release. That's what my co-host told me, because I asked him the same question.
Is that what your lawyer told you?
No, that's not what my lawyer
told me. Check with the lawyer.
I'll check with the lawyer.
And the publisher.
I will just be repeating their words that is recorded.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But
you never know.
There's a difference between, was that a local show?
No, syndicated in 185 countries.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, odds are you're all right, but check it out.
I'm all right, but it wouldn't hurt to check it out.
Yep.
So I want to thank you all for tuning in, all you on Facebook Live. You know, don't be so shy. You could call in next time. I put the phone number on there because we'd love to call, to have you call and just chat. Because that's what we do, right?
And bounce around answers, yeah.
Yeah, and brainstorm. You know,
yeah.
You don't have to be a caregiver because, like I says, if you're not a caregiver, just wait. You're either going to become one, you're going to need one. Now is the time to learn how to be a caregiver, not after tragedy strikes. You don't have time to scratch your head.
Do it now. They don't teach you?
No, they should teach you right next to home economics how to make a grilled cheese sandwich. How to be a caregiver. It would be very useful and worth it. But I don't run the education system in California, so what can I say?
Right.
Anyway, thank you for tuning in. And until next time, bye-bye.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing.